Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
During the last 25 years, we destroyed water. Because when I was a child, this was the simplest thing of all. This was the essence of life. And when you were thirsty, that's the operative word, ladies and gentlemen. The word is and has and will always be thirsty. Not hydrate. They made that f***ing word up. I could go anywhere in my house when I was a child. You know, there was three or four different rooms. I could go to my basement and I could get clean water and drink it. And then go back out and play. And those were great times. But then we decided every town and every village which had the water coming to it, and all they had to do was clean it, said, we'll save money. We won't clean the water so much. And with the money we can save, we can then buy the water at the supermarket. Try to go through this logic with me. Our country had water coming to our homes. And even if we were locked out, we could still get it. Clean water. And we said, no! F*** you. I don't want it to be that damn convenient. I want to drive and drive and drive and look for water like my ancestors did. So we now buy water from Coke and Pepsi. Because when I think clean water, oh yeah, I f***ing think Coke and Pepsi.
From the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. He's a legendary, charismatic megafauna in his own mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Good planets are in the main. Right.
And speaking of water, I think Lewis Black is the funniest man on the planet.
Oh, yeah. Especially for a cynical guy like you. Right up your alley, Novak.
Ah, see, I thought you hadn't noticed that I'm that. See, and there was Mike Sanders today, first starting with the call yesterday to Mighty House from Julia, the listener who said, it's nice to hear radio that's not angry.
Yeah.
So I had to start with something angry.
Yeah, you sure did. I like it.
Lewis Black.
He's great.
He's just fabulous. Yeah. And he's like my dad.
Yeah, okay.
Except a lot funnier. My dad would just get angry. And he'd explode. It's like Mount Vesuvius. You could, you know, you see smoke starting to come out and then you'd back away. And uh-huh. Yeah, it might be time to go out and play with kids. And then, you know, wait till the explosion happens and then come back and hope he hadn't grabbed his strap or anything like that while he was all exploding. But love Lewis Black, and especially since he's talking about water there. And we're going to talk about water in the second hour of the show. I don't know if you've been to my website. And so folks who've been to my website this morning, and some, I know some people check it out and they check out my Facebook before I go on the air. And I've already got the tweets coming in from the regulars, you know, like, I've got Cope Dog who promises he's going to behave today. I don't care, Cope Dog. I really don't. Yes, I do. I care deeply and profoundly. And folks, you know, I got Brenda Haas from BG Garden, and there's a big tweet up happening tomorrow night in anticipation of the Independent Garden Center show at Navy Pier. I will get into that a little more later. So my shout out to her, and probably Annie Havens listening in California, and that's cool. And Zan's listening, who said she's off to the Glenwood Farmers Market. Looking forward to listening to the show when she gets back. Don't miss much of it, huh? Of course, you can always catch it on the podcast, which is at MikeNovak.net. See, I got the podcast reference in
that was
very
good.
Quickly.
That
you
was
didn't,
good.
You didn't have to prod me.
Oh, no, that was good. That.
But the amazing thing is if you and I'm always flattered that people will read the stuff and prepare and want to know what I'm going to be talking about on the show. Today is going to be really something's going to happen that has never happened on the show before. And that is the city of Chicago is going to apologize to me, actually to my block. I've been talking the last several weeks, as you know, Denny, about the trees that have gotten damaged by the Department of Water Management that's been working on the block for a month. And I called the Department of Forestry. I called the Department of Water Management. And I found out that, and I sent email, sent pictures, found out those pictures were kind of making their way through the various
really?
Departments. Yep.
Okay.
I don't know how high up it got, but it got high up enough so that we're going to have a conversation about what happened on the block today with the official representatives from the city of Chicago.
I like it.
Well, you know, I do too. And I will say something in their defense right now, which is to say I'm glad they're stepping up and doing this mm-hmm. and responding. I would hope that they would respond to anybody who makes a complaint, not just a guy with a radio show. And I didn't really want to get that out early when I talked to them, but I also wanted to get something done, and I wanted to make a point. So we will be talking later in the program to Tom LaPorte, who's with the Department of Water Management. He's the assistant commissioner with the Department of Water Management for the city of Chicago. And John Lowe, who's a senior city forester with the Chicago Bureau of Forestry. And you have to understand, I'm going to make it really clear. Bureau of Forestry is the good guys. They didn't cause any damage. I contacted them because I want to know how we fix things now, you know, and when you have a limb that's gone off a tree, well, you don't put back a new one. You clean up the scarred part of the tree as best you can and hope the tree survives. And we have a number of those on the block. And if any of you have not heard this conversation before and you want to know what I'm talking about, just go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Because I have a lot of photos there. I have photos on the homepage. Actually, one in particular that you'll see that represents some of the damage that was done on the block. So we will have that conversation right after 10 o'clock. Before then, a lot of other stuff going on. As I mentioned, there's the garden chat. For those, and this is to the people who like to tweet. I know a lot of you don't care about Twitter. And a lot of you don't care about Facebook, and that's okay. But I have to appeal to a lot of different. Yeah. I don't know what Tumblr is, and I keep saying, "Oh, check out Tumblr." Well, no, thank you. I won't go to Google Plus.
Not missing much on Google Plus.
Oh, really?
That's weird. I don't like it.
It hasn't taken over Facebook's.
No, I don't think so.
Of course, we got to worry about Facebook because it's the stock price is going into the toilet. And what happens if I'm just trying to imagine what would happen if Facebook disappeared tomorrow? It's like they said, we're bankrupt. We can't do this anymore. All right. Sorry for you billion people who are on Facebook. We got to go.
I would hope that they don't go bankrupt.
I can't imagine.
They did a lot of, advertising tie-in.
I don't even know how that works in terms of the stock prices. They obviously ran the company before they went public. Uh-huh. Do they just go back to being private? I don't know. I don't know. I can't profess to know how this works. And a friend of mine's son is working in Palo Alto, California, with Zuckerberg.
Oh.
He's working for Facebook.
Okay.
So, you know, and of course, a lot of his friends know he is too. So he gets these messages all the time. Hey, can you blah, 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 blah. Can you do this for me? And it's like, no, I can't. No, I don't have any special privileges here. That's kind of interesting. But, so I wanted to mention that those of you who like to tweet, there's a garden chat event and basically here's how it works. You go on Twitter and tomorrow it's at 7 p.m. Central time. And you tweet, you look at the tweets coming in and they talk about whatever the subject is of the day. And it goes by very fast. Have you ever been to a chat on Twitter?
No.
Denny?
No.
They go by so fast. I don't know how people keep up. And by the way, I just got and you'll appreciate this. I just got a tweet that says, "We, the Twitter people, are the most important ones." You probably already know that. So see, they're paying attention.
Yeah, that's good.
And they're tweeting me. But so tomorrow evening at the Peterson Garden Project, which is on the north side of Chicago, and of course, LaManda Joy, who's been part of that, and I've had her on the show many times. She's hosting this Twitter event, and a lot of people from the tweetosphere or whatever they call it will be there. And then those people in the next few days will be at the Independent Garden Center show at Navy Pier, which is really not for the public so much as it is for people in the industry. I mention it because it's fun for people like me, and it's important for people who run independent garden centers. And of course, I always push independent garden centers, and I'm trying to keep them going because the prevalence of the box stores is so great that I urge you shop at your local independent garden center. That's why I have them advertised on my radio program because I think it's that important. So the big tweet up is tomorrow night, and if you go to Twitter, type in hashtag garden chat, and all that information is on my website. Go to MikeNovak.net and this week's show, and you'll see that. Also on the show today, Lori Gravagna from Knooper. I'm going to finally figure out exactly how to pronounce that, but I believe the correct pronunciation is Knooper Nursery and Landscape, out in Palatine. I'm speaking there next Saturday at 1:00. I hope you'll join me. I'm going to be talking about my community garden. And they're having their big veggie fair. It's the first annual. We'll talk about that later in the show. I've got a lot of other things. The first 100 Native Gardens Walk, which happened in McHenry yesterday, but there's still a chance for you to register for it. On and on and on. All kinds. There's good news from the Southeast Environmental Task Force. And so forth. But right now, this is one of the good news stories of the year. And I go to the phones and bring in Barbara Malera from D. Landreth Seed Company. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Mike and Dennis. How are you guys?
We're great.
Hey, doing good.
You've not met Dennis before. So, Denny, meet Barbara.
Hey, that was the first time a caller has said hello to old phone screener Dennis. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're right. It's the first shout out I think we've gotten to the phone screener Dennis.
Yeah. Wait. Give it that ding. Come on.
Where's the ding? There we go.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're an important guy, Denny.
Cool.
And so's Barbara. Those of you who have listened to my show for any length of time, and at least in the last year, know that D. Landreth Seed Company is one of the fine heirloom seed purveyors in the country. It is the oldest seed company in America, 227, or was it, are we at 228 yet?
We are at 228, Mike.
228 years old. Let's get that. That deserves a ding as well. George Washington bought his seeds from D. Landreth, which I just think is very cool. And did Jefferson get his seeds there, or did he come up with his own?
No. Jefferson bought his seeds everywhere, but he did buy seeds from Landreth, as well as Madison and James Mason and every United States president up until and including FDR, and perhaps beyond that. But the documentation is only good to FDR.
I thought James Mason was the British actor.
Well, him too.
And he bought seeds from Landreth as well. a year ago, you were under the gun. It was.
Yes, we were.
You
almost a year ago to the day, August the 30th.
Wow, that's yep. right.
Yep.
So in a couple of minutes, explain to our listeners, who those who aren't familiar with the story, what happened.
Well, we were sued and our bank accounts were garnished, and so we had no money to operate. And our Facebook genius, who we had just retained 2 weeks before, came to me and said, Barb, I've got an idea. And she hosted an event on Facebook and said, look, this company needs your help. They're selling their catalog, buy their catalog. And that young woman sent that out to 900 of her friends, who sent it out to 3,000 of their friends, who sent it out to 250,000 of their friends. And those people bought lots and lots and lots of catalogs. And today we are in very good shape, and it looks like we will survive to exist for another 228 years.
And see, there you go. The power of the social media. Don't let Facebook go under.
I doubt it's going to go under, Mike.
No, I don't think so either. They got a lot more money than I have.
But I've come today to tell you and your listeners and Denny, about, I am so excited because each year at this time of the year, we offer fall blooming bulbs. They're very rare. They're very hard to get to, but they're some of the most unique things you can put in your garden. And so I would love to tell your listeners about the fall blooming bulbs that we are offering.
I'm sorry. We're out of time, Barbara. I really can't do that. No, it's wonderful to have you back. I'm going to, in full disclosure, I'm happy to have you back as an advertiser on the Mike Novak Show. But I'm also, you know, you're a breath mint and a candy mint. You're a news story and an advertiser. It's the best of all possible worlds. And you're talking about, fall blooming bulbs, which I agree are fun. If you're you know, in August and you're looking at your tired garden and you're saying, oh, I can't do this anymore, there's nothing that's going to inspire me, this is going to inspire people, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's even the people that don't have gardens, this one is going to inspire them, because some of this they can do inside their house. So it's absolutely fascinating. As we were talking earlier, you mentioned the Latin term, colchicum, and lots of people think that the bulbs that bloom in the fall are called colchicum. Most of them are, but there are actually some fall-blooming crocus as well.
Ah, okay, and folks don't know that I did talk to you off-air, and you say colchicum, I say colchicum, whatever, maybe it's colchicum. But I've been growing them, and you call them on your website water lily. Colchicum, an heirloom variety that you have, which is a now this is not a Native American plant. It's indigenous to the Mediterranean.
That's right.
But it's deer resistant. Yeah. And the flowers are magnificent. And by the description of the plant, yeah, they look kind of like water lilies.
They do. And they're almost the size of a small water lily. Actually, the term colchicum comes from the Kingdom of Colchis, which was an ancient kingdom located between the Caucasus and Armenia, and, Harry Potter fans, was supposed to be the source of all the sorcery in this world. So that's where Colchicum comes from, the Kingdom of Colchis. Now, the thing that's really incredible about the water lily crocus, or the water lily colchicum, is that you can actually force that bulb, but not in the way that you force tulip bulbs or daffodil bulbs or paper whites. You stick it in a saucer or in a bulb vase with no water, and it will bloom in that saucer or that bulb vase in 2 to 3 weeks. If you then, as soon as the bloom is finished, stick it in the ground, you can actually save that bulb, and it'll come back year after year. But for people who don't have gardens, this is a great way to have an indoor garden. Just stick it in a saucer, no water.
Yeah, and it just goes, It's amazing. I grow them in my backyard. They've come back reliably for years. As a matter of fact, they have begun to multiply. They're naturalizing. And I got to dig them up right now before they bloom, because they bloom in September. And that's the other cool thing is this is a bulb you plant in August and you get immediate gratification about a month later. And they do naturalize, and I want to move some around, so I better get going on that. So that's one of the really cool things you have. The other is the wild saffron crocus.
Yep, the real thing.
The real deal. Yeah. You say some amazing things on about this, and I'm going to talk about this in the second hour a little bit, but tell us about the wild saffron.
Well, we offer both the wild saffron and now the cultivated saffron crocus. And your listeners have to recognize that these are very, very short plants. They only get to be 2.5 to 3 inches tall with their blossom. The saffron crocus is the source of saffron, the world's most expensive spice. It takes 35,000 bulbs to create 1 pound of saffron. So you probably won't be growing pounds of saffron in your backyard garden. if you were a home gardener who only wanted to grow your own saffron, it would take 1,100 bulbs to create about 1/2 ounce. And that's what an average family of four might use in a year with average cooking with saffron.
And what do you use saffron for in cooking?
It is a flavoring and coloring agent. It turns whatever you put it into a bright, bright yellow. So you use it in rice. You use it in curries. You can use it in stews. It's used in almost all Mediterranean cooking. So it's a flavoring agent and a coloring agent.
As you pointed out, my listeners in the Chicago area need to know this. If you're not in Chicago, you've got to judge for yourself. The wild saffron will grow here, but the other saffron will not. It's hardy only to zone 6, and we're right on the cusp there. If you have a sheltered area, you could probably get away with it. And you know, given how warm our winters have been, you know, and the moment I say that, it'll get down to 25 below this year. But the other saffron, I would say if you're in Chicago, get the wild saffron. I also like the color better.
Yes, I do too.
Because it's that lovely deep blue.
And it's almost a true blue as opposed to a periwinkle color.
Yeah, and you don't see that a lot in nature. It's kind of interesting. At least in flowers, Mother Nature is very guarded about using her blues, isn't she?
Yeah, very much so. It's probably the rarest of all colors in nature, true blue. There's lots of variations, like I said, the periwinkle, but true blue is very, very rare.
So you've got, this is a good time for you to order bulbs from DeLandres Seed Company. All you need to do is go to their website, which is www.landrethseeds.com. And the cool thing is you've got all that information on the homepage. It sort of scrolls about the saffron crocus, the wild saffron crocus, and, of course, the colchicum. and people can order right away and get satisfied. About how fast do you think is the turnaround right now?
Oh, it's 24 hours. We received the first shipment of bulbs on Friday, and we shipped everybody who had ordered to date on Friday. We did not get the wild saffron in. They're due in at the end of this coming week. But the thing that your listeners need to understand is this is a very perishable product, which is why they don't normally see it in their garden centers. We've got 3 weeks. We will have these bulbs for 3 weeks, and then they'll be gone. So you can't think about it and order at the end of September, they'll be gone. You have to order now.
There you go. There's the imperative. Get it done today. Go to DeLandreth Seeds, or actually LandrethSeeds.com. Before I let you go, Barbara, what other items do you have that people might want to take note of at this time of year?
Well, they should go through our heirloom garlic collection, because our heirloom garlic is due in around mid-September. They need to order that now. Heirloom garlic varieties are grown by small farmers, so there's always limited supplies. And if they like our varieties, we have about 18 different varieties, they should order them now. Garlic, again, needs to be planted in the fall. And in your area, they should be planting end of October, early November with their heirloom garlics. They've got a little bit of time, except that the quantities are limited, so they need to order as soon as they can.
And we did plant some of that last year. And it was wonderful, and we harvested it earlier this year in our community garden. I highly recommend it.
Is yours curing now, or did you eat it all the minute you got it?
We're still curing a little bit of it. You can't eat garlic that fast, but. I mean, or maybe you can. I guess you can. Before I want to let you go, I actually had a tweet from somebody who said, and I agree, we got to recognize that a year ago when I found out about it, and most people in Chicago found out about your troubles as a company, it was Mr. Brown Thumb who got the word out.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. Yes.
He's ubiquitous, and he knows so much about gardening, and he's one of those social media guys that gets the word out. And it was through him that I found out about you, and I'm counting on my listeners and the Chicago area, my friends on Facebook and on Twitter, and who listen to the show on the radio the old school way, to step up, because I know, and you told me this in the spring, Chicagoans stepped up big time and ordered a lot from your company.
That's exactly right. They're a big part of why this company's still around. I can't thank each of you enough, but also you should be proud of yourselves. You saved something that in this country that's really worth saving.
Better, truer words were never spoken. Barbara Malera from D. Landreth Seed Company. Again, you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net. I've got all the links there on this week's show, or you can just go straight to LandrethSeeds.com, or you can go to the Facebook page, and I'm going to blank right now. What's the Facebook handle?
It's Landreth Seed Co. Landreth Seeds Co. C-O.
Seeds with an S or seed?
Seeds with an S.
Okay, Landreth Seeds Co. Barbara Malera, all wonderful to talk to you. Keep me posted. And again, folks, you want those fall blooming crocuses. And that's what some people call them, fall crocuses. And I know that some of these terms are used interchangeably, but actually we're talking about colchicum. And saffron, they're a lot of fun to grow, and you're going to be the star of your neighborhood if you get them. Yes?
Absolutely.
Okay, Barbara. All right, Barbara, you have a great Sunday. I know you're working hard. You're probably going right back out in the field, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Okay. Go harvest something for me, okay?
We'll do that. Mike and Dennis, thanks an awful lot.
All right, take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. That's such a good story. That's, they had to raise, well, they were trying to sell a million catalogs at, it's kind of Austin Powers thing. I want you to sell 1 million catalogs.
So. Very nice lady.
She is. I hope to meet her in person sometime. I haven't had the opportunity to do that yet. And I keep saying, when are you coming to Chicago? And she says, well, not yet. I'm still working hard. All right. When we come back, I got lots of stuff coming up this week, and we will get to it.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life.
Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
If you haven't been by Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center recently, you'll be amazed at the changes they've made. Just a reminder, this used to be, you know, up until this year, was Grand Street Gardens in the heart of the city in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood. Now it's Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, and their yard has never looked so full and beautiful. And their new collection of cast stone fountains, urns, statues, and bird baths is the icing on the cake. In styles from whimsical to traditional, you're bound to fall in love with their beautiful new collection. And right now, they're marking down. This is the, you know, this is when you do it in August, marking down hundreds of plants and containers and other items to clearance prices. Check them out. Meanwhile, the annuals, perennials, trees, and shrubs look fantastic. This is urban gardening at its best. Don't forget, they also have supplies for raising bees and chickens. And if you need a little help getting plants to your doorstep, they deliver. Like Christy Weber Farm and Garden Center on Facebook to receive special offers and the latest news. Or go to ChristyWeber.com and click on Garden Center. Or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Look for the explosion of color. Some of the listeners that I have don't want to work, don't want to play, just want to play in the garden all day. It's kind of the same thing, you know? Of course, if you have hardpan soil, you'll be banging on the soil all day with your shovel or your axe or whatever. I have some good news that I got from the Southeast Environmental Task Force, Tom Shepard. It announced on the 7th, 2 days ago, okay, that the their submission was among the initial projects selected to be funded through the Millennium Reserve Project that was announced by Senator Dick Durbin and Interior Secretary Ken Salazar on Thursday. The funding was granted to the organization at a ceremony, and there's a picture. I got a picture of Tom Shepard there. He's on a roll. They are on a roll. This is good stuff because, as you know, the governor signed the landfill ban. I went down to the ceremony there on the south side and southeast side of Chicago. And then the governor vetoed the legislation that would have allowed the Leucadia plant. And, of course, a lot of people, media, not just me, but a lot of the big media said this is a boondoggle. Let's not do that. Of course, environmental groups didn't want it to happen. And now they receive funding, which is earmarked towards expanding their environmental, cultural, and industrial tours of the Calumet region. It's all part of the Millennium Reserve that was announced earlier in the year, where the south side, southeast side, maybe we're actually going to do something for nature down there. Maybe we'll just stop throwing sludge and toxic waste and building power plants and recognize that that area is the confluence of some of the great ecological regions of the country. You know, we have the North Forest and the Plains and the Eastern hardwood forest, all have a confluence right there in the southern shore of Lake Michigan. There are a number of species that are seen nowhere else, and the mix of those different areas make it, you know, it's like Chicago being the hub for trains and for transportation in America. This is kind of a hub for a lot of the wildlife in the country and on North America, the North American continent. So it's good to see some of that money going down there so that we can do something. Let's clean it up. And I'm very, very happy for what's happened on the south side, southeast side of Chicago. And I know those folks have worked hard for decades, decades and decades and decades. I mean, I'm late to the party. I'm happy to be part of it. But these are folks who have lived there, have experienced this. And my congratulations to the folks at the Southeast Environmental Task Force on the announcement of the money they're going to receive from the Interior. Something happened yesterday, which is cool. Now, I'm sorry I missed it last week leading up to it, but still, I wanted to let you know that the Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee, the WPPC, which, and I always say, you guys need a better name, but it's not going to change. You know, it's one of those things. They've been around a really long time, and they're great people, and they're up in McHenry, and I've spoken to the WPPC, and they just do great environmental work out there in McHenry. They held this garden walk yesterday because they have this thing called the mentoring program, the Natural Garden in Your Yard mentoring program. And basically, they teach people how to plant native plants in their backyard and make a difference in the world. Because, you know, even a small area with natives is going to be a haven for our native species, our birds and our insects. They had a walk yesterday, and they were celebrating a major accomplishment. Over 100 homeowners in McHenry County have planted native gardens in their yards. Now, how cool is that? And they had 22 of them open to the public for a self-guided tour yesterday. And again, I'm sorry I didn't have it announced it last week. But the point is, you can still get involved for next year if you live out that way. The deadline for applications for the next mentoring class, where they will teach you, the Wildflower Preservation and Propagation Committee, WPPC, I always say it sounds like the old Soviet Union, the Da Bonyi, WPPC.
That was good.
Thank you.
That's funny. One more time.
Da Bonyi. that's all I know how to say in Russian. I don't even know if it's real Russian. I think it's pseudo-Russian. Pat Sullivan Schreier wrote to me, and she says that the deadline for the next mentoring class is next Saturday, August 25th, 2012. So if you're interested, you can go to the website, thewppc.org. I've got the link on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show and click on Natural Garden in Your Yard. Natural Garden in Your Yard. And it gives a description of the program and a link to the application. No charge for participating. The only costs are whatever plants you purchase for your yard, and they will teach you how to do that. So I think that's a really, really cool thing. And the last thing I want to point out before we get Mr. DeMaio in here is another thing going on next Saturday. Lots of stuff going on next Saturday. Rich and Susie Air up at Rich's Fox Willow Pines in Woodstock, Illinois. They're having their Hosta Sale and Arts and Crafts fundraiser. They used to call it the Hosta Happening. I love what they do up there. It's at Rich's Fox Willow Pines, which is at 11618 McConnell Road in Woodstock. Those of you up that way know where it is. And they sell hostas, and all the proceeds benefit Heifer International and Mano a Mano International Partners. Rich and Susie have been doing this for years also, selling hostas, donating a lot of proceeds from their operation to Heifer. They are to be congratulated for this, and here they go again. I've got the link on my website. Go to this week's show. It is always fun to go up there and say hi to them. And Margaret, say hi to Margaret, lovely Margaret up there, who's been doing this for years also. And here's what I want you to do. If you go there, if you stop in this week, and again, it's next Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And like I said, the info is on my website, but go in and say Mike sent you, that you heard about it on Mike's show. And he advised you to go up and buy some hostas so that you can benefit Heifer International. And it's a great cause. And again, kudos to Rich and Susan Ayer for all the great work they do. Something funny happened on the way to the end of summer this year. It got cooler. Yay. Which means that a lot of gardeners got interested in gardening again. Go figure. Those folks need the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. There's a lot you can learn no matter where you are in the Chicago area. That's because they feature regional reports from southern Wisconsin, southwestern Michigan, the far western suburbs, the south suburbs, the Rockford area, and northwest Indiana. That's a lot of gardening info packed into one little magazine. And that's just one of the regular features. There's also the Garden Shop, or Shop-E, because it's got a little E on the end of it, where you can learn about the latest products that will make your garden look great. And, of course, there's the What to Do in the Garden column, which gives you month by month on how to care for your ornamentals, edibles, and lawn throughout the year. Then there's my column on the inside back page. Is it ornamental or edible? We may never know. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Rick DeMaio weather in 60 seconds. Meanwhile, here's a tip from the Care of Trees website. An article posted from a Texas newspaper says that although drought is often the cause, trees can die for other reasons besides lack of soil moisture. Drought is the primary contributor to tree kill, but it may not be exactly the way you might be thinking. You might find this hard to believe, but relatively few trees die directly from dehydration. Instead, drought severely weakens mature trees, making them susceptible to opportunistic pathogens. In most instances, trees that die are already stressed from a number of pre-existing environmental factors, such as overcrowding, growing on the wrong site, age, soil compaction, trenching, or inappropriate use of herbicides. If not for these factors, a large proportion of the trees that die might actually recover from drought. This is an important concept to remember because the best defense against drought is to promote a tree's health and vigor through proper care and management. And the people to do that are the certified arborists at the Care of Trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4222. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. My
My music. Yeah, see, we've got the meteorologist that you can't touch. And that is Rick DeMaio. Can't touch this.
A little MC Hammer on a summer morning is, on a Sunday morning is nice, right, Mike?
On a beautiful Sunday morning. What says Sunday morning in Chicago better than MC Hammer?
I don't think you can top that.
I don't know, but I think that if Mike Sanders were here, he'd be writhing in pain on the floor, I think.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, you think so, Denny? Okay, yeah. Yeah.
I want to say, great show so far, and you were, you know, talking about A Care of Treason up here, sitting at a Starbucks outside of Plaza del Lago, and looking around at all the trees. I'm thinking, you know, what will we do without trees? Really, what will we do without trees?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they're some people say they're the greatest plants on the planet, and I would have to agree.
And, you know, it's interesting because when we went through, you know, the drought, it didn't approach severe limits here in Northeast Illinois, but the trees were really the only things that remained green. And as soon as we got the recent rains that we got, you know, the soil moisture back to what's kind of like near normal conditions for the first 3 inches, all of a sudden the grass got green. And you're looking around and going, what drought?
Except, Rick, for the trees that you can see the leaves, some of them have turned brown. They sort of gave up the ghost. There are a couple of trees out in the parkway here, right at the radio ranch, that dropped their leaves altogether. Now, they were planted, I think, about a year ago. And I went out to look at them this morning on my way in because there's not a leaf on any of them. And yet, really? And yet there's buds. What they did is they couldn't afford to lose. They were transpiring. So we've talked about this before. They dropped their leaves, but they formed buds. And I got a feeling they're going to leaf out in the spring. Now, they have been through a really hard summer. And if it happens 2 years in a row, I think they're going to be goners.
Yeah, that second year is going to be the most, you know, the critical part. I was mentioning last week, I was at a Starved Rock last Saturday, and they're actually in much worse condition than we are here in Cook County, where you get into north central Illinois, and they're still in, you know, much drier conditions, topsoil down to, you know, 6 to 10 inches. And I noticed walking through the area there that many, many, many trees already probably halfway through losing all their color. And, you know, now it begs the question what type of fall foliage are we going to have. And I don't think I can ever truly or anybody can truly predict what type of fall foliage we're going to have, because it still depends on a lot of things that are still short term. And even though you do develop that, quote, brilliant color due to the lack of rainfall and the abundance of dry weather, you still need to keep the leaves on the trees for a long period of time. And we've seen that as well. So this kind of leads into what I wanted to talk about, which was here in Northeast Illinois, much of Cook County, probably southern sections of Lake County. You get into the northern suburbs, they're still very, very dry up there. And then you get into Lake and Porter County, Indiana. It's amazing, Mike. We've actually had near normal precipitation over the last 30 days. And going through the first 17 days of the month of August, believe it or not, we're actually running a deficit temperature-wise of about a half a degree below normal, a complete turnaround than what we had around here in July.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. But the more go figure part is you look at a larger map of the Midwest and all the way from Colorado into parts of Kentucky and Indiana and Tennessee, and the rest of the Midwest is about 95% still in severe drought conditions. And here in Northeast Illinois, you drive on a highway between Chicago and Indianapolis, and once you get east of, say, Porter County, Indiana, it's bone dry. You go south about, say, 15 or 20 miles south of Will County, it's bone dry. North of here, bone dry. West of here, bone dry. We've really lucked out, yet we're the one area in the Midwest that doesn't need the rainfall. We're not the people growing corn and soybeans and things like that. So clearly, corn and soybeans, as just issued by the USDA and the National Agricultural Staff Service, 75% of the corn crop in Illinois and 71% of the corn crop in Indiana still considered to be in poor and very poor conditions. And new word is out that the number of bushels of corn that is likely to be pretty much non-usable is about the same as it was back in 1988. Now, the absolute number is the same, but the percentage of the stuff that was, the percentage of corn that was planted between now and 1988 obviously is much higher because we get more bushels of acre or more corn per acre. So the bottom line is we're planting more corn. So as long as we plant more corn, even though we have a devastating drought, it may not be as serious as 1988, but still we're in dire need of rainfall. At least 4 to 6 inches of rainfall is what is needed to get us back to normal.
What accounts for our having the rainfall right in this little area here where we're surrounded by drought? Is that just luck?
I think it's luck. I think when you see the type of, you go back and you look at the number of thunderstorm events that we had around here between July, I think it was 20th, and about the 15th of August, we had two or three different shots of rain that came through. We had obviously the lake effect rain last Thursday and Friday. But the rain that they got across central Illinois on Wednesday and Thursday, which amounted to almost 3 inches, is pretty much a lot too late. Now, in the end, when you end up looking back at this year, if you don't look back at numbers prior to the middle of August, you'll go, oh, look, they got near normal rainfall, but it all came too late. That's like saying you were gone for 3 weeks and you didn't water your lawn. The lawn is brown, then you come back and you put 6 inches of water and expecting to pop up right away. It's not going to happen. So I think the bottom line there is, you know, we just got lucky in the amount of rainfall that we got here in the city. But still, parts of northern Cook and Lake County, or at least northern McHenry and Lake County, still in dire needs of rainfall. And this is when we're actually now heading into what typically is the drier time of the year, September and October. So we're still obviously in need of, you know, persistent rainfall, steady rainfall, but the cooler temperatures have definitely helped. And I mean, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, the chances of getting anything above 90 degrees, few and far between. So far, that prediction has held. And long term, we may end up the entire month of August with one day above 90 degrees, which is amazing considering what we had here in June and July.
And I always count on you. And, you know, folks, and I know my listeners appreciate your reports and your predictions. And I know your weather guys don't like to predict things, but
I don't mind going long term. I really don't. I think I have a real good feel of what's happening. And, you know, sometimes you got to, like, stop looking at just actual numbers and kind of get a feel of the pattern. And usually persistence is pretty good during heat waves and droughts. And once they break, persistence tells you that once a heat wave and a drought breaks, it's pretty much done. And we're done with that, at least for the foreseeable future. Now, will we go back into a heat wave like we had in March and October? That could still be one of those things that could happen. But as far as it being extreme heat, that's obviously not going
to
happen.
Hey, I think we need to bracket the year, don't you, Rick?
You know what? I don't know how you bracket a year like this, because if you really think about it, October 2011, we had the worst snowstorm all winter happened actually before Halloween up and down the East Coast. Then we basically had no snow the entire winter. Then we had, you know, amazing heat in March. We had incredible heat in June, July, and now August has basically gone dry. So who knows what the fall and early winter are going to be like? And we're still, you know, we're still only halfway through the hurricane season, and we're up to the letter H, but everything has been basically weak and out over the Atlantic. So even though the Hurricane Center is predicting above normal conditions, it still doesn't look like any of those storms are going to make it, you know, into the mainland of the United States. So when people hear about a hurricane forecast above average, the question is, are those storms going to make them make inland or make progress inland and produce some rains? And right now, that doesn't look like it's going to happen either.
Well, let's talk to you very shortly about that. We have the conditions ripe for large storms, but we're not seeing any. I mean, in terms of the water temperatures, right? What is preventing these storms from developing?
That's a great question, Mike. What we look at is the amount of shear. In other words, the amount of wind between the surface and up to about 10,000 feet and then up to about 30,000 feet. Once you can get those storms developing in an environment where there's very, very weak winds, you can typically get these hurricanes to develop into larger storms, Category 3, 4s, and 5s. But that hasn't happened. There's just too much wind from the surface up to about 10,000 feet. So instead of getting a large area of undisturbed weather that can actually grow into a hurricane, getting these weak disturbances and weak tropical storms, which is why I always tell people that you just can't look at one or two things from a long-term pattern, say water temperature, when you talk about hurricanes. One of the things that I'm writing in my new climate change class, which I've totally had to rewrite over the last couple of years, is that you just don't look at water temperature and go, oh, look, warmer waters, more hurricanes. You can't do that. There's a lot of other things that you have to look at. And in addition to that, as we've seen last year, we had, above average number of hurricanes and tropical storms. But the upper level winds, even after those storms developed, kept all those hurricanes and tropical storms away from the mainland. So you ask most people, hey, how was the hurricane season last year? They go, we got like one hurricane, and that was Irene. But yet we had above normal conditions, or at least above normal numbers. They just didn't make it to the inland areas. And now all of a sudden we had tropical storm Gordon become a Category 2 hurricane, but it's basically south of the Azores, so no one really knows about it. So hurricanes, tropical storms is a totally different animal when you relate that to precipitation here in the United States and also climate change.
Yeah, you know, we're not interested in anything south of the, southern hemisphere. Oh, come on, really? Well, who cares?
It's one of those things, right.
All right, you want to give me the Mars forecast, too? Do you have that? You've been following that?
No, what's up with Mars?
Oh, it's just cool. I mean, I've got all the links to NASA and the Curiosity rover.
Curiosity. Well, I'll be interested in Curiosity when it finds Mitt Romney's tax forms. How about that?
Whoa! Okay, I think that's where they are. He's hiding something on Mars. All right, give us a forecast.
If you're heading down to the Urine Water Show, great conditions for that. A lot of high cirrus clouds. Temperatures today, mid to upper 70s, probably upper 70s tomorrow, upper 70s Tuesday, and then probably the rest of the week, maybe temperatures right around 80 degrees, but nothing in the way of any heavy rainfall, nothing in the way of any what I call extreme heat. I think the next 2 weeks, Mike, really are acting like the first 2 weeks of September. So until further notice, very quiet weather here in the Midwest.
Keep it coming. That's all I got. Yeah, and we'll look forward to the 90s in October, right?
We'll probably see that in October, right? But I know a lot of people say the end of summer, my garden looks tired. This time of the year, Mike, I think gardens look the best. Everything is in full bloom.
Well, there you have it. You heard it from Rick DeMaio. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or MikeNovak.net on my homepage and get the link there. And, Rick, always a pleasure. Thank you for the great forecast. I'll talk to you next week.
Take care, Mike.
Bye. In the second hour of the show, as I previewed earlier, I've got a couple of departments from the city of Chicago, Water Management Department. Tom LaPorte will be here from that, and I will have John Lowe from the Bureau of Forestry. We're going to talk about what's been going on in my block with the construction and the damage to the trees that happened there. And I hope you stick around and you want to call in 773-763-9278 if you're interested in that conversation. We will see you then.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. If you can't catch us on the AM, A&M and the FNM, you can always stream live at chicagosprogressivetalk.com. And that link, of course, is on my website, too, MikeNovak.net. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, Facebook, Twitter, podcasts. What am I missing? We've got it all. And Denny Sheeter's there on the other side of the glass, running from room to room to answer the phones.
But not the first time.
Don't ask us why, because we're not going to tell you. It's just a, you know what? It's, you know, it's like the Olympics. They just throw hurdles in. They want to make this interesting. So if
I'm going for the gold, baby.
I think you are. and you're in the lead right now, too.
Nice,
okay.
Nice.
Great. As you know, the last few weeks, I've been talking about something that's going on in my neighborhood. And it's not my community garden, although my community garden is always going on in the neighborhood. And I will mention that our pumpkins are still being stolen. Not quite at the same rate that they've been stolen in the past. So maybe the thieves have been spotted, or they're getting a conscience. I don't know. But the other thing that's been going
on. Talking about the pumpkin thieves?
Yeah, the pumpkin thieves.
Okay. Well, we need to talk about that at the end of the hour. That's, I think we've been in the show with that. You know, little pumpkin
thieves. You mean, because I suggested a bear trap the other week. You've got something else in mind?
Oh, no. Nothing like that. Nothing crazy like that. Hope you didn't go through with that, by the way.
No, I did not.
Thank Lord.
But I do think it. I go to the dark side because it's the Dark Mike Rising.
Absolutely.
We need theme music for the Dark Mike Rising.
Yeah. I'll get on that.
Okay. You please do, Denny.
Absolutely.
Okay. But on my block, there's been some city work going on involving water mains. As you know, the infrastructure of Chicago is very old and needs to be replaced. That is something that is going on all over the city. In fact, in my neighborhood, on a number of the blocks, there's been a lot of that work being done. Problem is that we had some issues with the trees. There's a lot of heavy machinery, and they dig up the street, and they move down the street, and they dig a big hole. I don't even know exactly how deep it is, and lay pipes in. And there are backhoes and trucks, and I don't even know what lifter, whatever the machinery is, has caused some damage. And I've documented it and put it on my website. And I decided that it was important that I go to the city of Chicago and talk to them about this, because for one thing, I didn't know how prevalent this was. That being said, I want to bring in Tom Laporte, who is assistant commissioner for the Department of Water Management, City of Chicago. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Let's start with the work that's being done on my block, since you're in the water management. And maybe you can explain to me exactly what is being performed on my block.
I'd be happy to. And I'd like to start, though, Mike, with a very sincere and a very serious apology for what's happened to the trees on your block. I've seen the pictures on your website, and you and I have had discussions of it, and it's something that we feel very badly about, and we can talk about what we plan to do about it. But I just wanted to start with a sincere apology and put that across first. What we're doing is we're putting in water main on your street, and it's something we're doing all over town. We have an infrastructure that has 4,300 miles of water main in place, and a lot of it is very old. We expect about 100 years of life from our pipes, and we have more than 1,000 miles that is more than a century old. So it's important that we go after this renewal program. It's called Build a New Chicago, and it's important that we do this on a stepped-up basis. So this year, we're putting in three times the amount of water pipe that we did last year, and over the next 10 years, we're going to be putting in an average of about 100 miles per year, and that's a big increase over what we've done in the past, and it's a very ambitious program. So what we're doing on your street is installing the water main, and I can explain what the process is if you like.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. The old water main is left in place, and what we do is we dig a trench down one side of the street. Sewers go down the middle of the street, but water mains go on either curb, one or the other. And we dig a trench and install the new pipe right next to the old pipe. And as we do that, we just work our way down the street, and it's a process of installing the pipe, and then you have to fill the pipe with water and pressurize it, have pressure tests and chlorination so that it's completely disinfected and safe to drink. And then you go back and you take the service pipe from the home and transfer it from the old main to the new main. So people are out of water for very brief periods of time while you do that, but you're making two passes down the street at a minimum to install the pipe and then to transfer the homes to the new pipe. And that involves heavy equipment and backhoes and cranes and that kind of thing. Now, normally what we do is turn to the Bureau of Forestry, which is part of the Department of Streets and Sanitation, and ask them to prune any trees that might be in our way. We don't, some of the canopy, some of the tree cover in these streets is charming, but in the way, and there's a good chance, you know, that we could run into it if we weren't careful. And that's exactly what's happened on your street. In this case, on your street, what happened is that in the days before forestry could have come in to prune the trees for us and get the lower branches out of our way, there was a serious storm in Chicago, and there was a lot of tree damage, a lot of tree emergencies all over town. So the crews that normally would have been dispatched to prune the trees in advance of our heavy equipment coming in were unavailable. They were dealing with trees in the streets and other emergencies. And so because of our ambitious schedule, we simply thought that we could be careful and move down the street with without being able to wait for them, because we can't really fall behind schedule if we have these crews so interconnected with each other and moving around town. Unfortunately, we got ahead of ourselves. The trees were damaged. I've seen the pictures on your site. My commissioner has seen the pictures on your website. It's very disturbing to us, and I can imagine how much grief has caused people on the street who love their trees and who are not happy when a city crew comes and basically does pretty dramatic looking damage to it. What we're going to be doing is to finish our job and then ask forestry to come in and do all repairs possible. And if trees need to be replaced, we'll do those. We're also taking steps to make sure that our crews are not going to repeat this in any other part of town. So we take it very, very seriously. We feel very badly for the neighbors who saw their trees damaged. And so the apology is sincere, and that's the explanation of what the process is and why in this case it went wrong.
Well, first of all, apology accepted on behalf of the people on my block. And I appreciate you stepping up and doing the right thing and admitting that there was a problem here. And I, of course, will pass that along to everybody on my street. A couple of things before I bring in John Lowe from the Bureau of Forestry. In fact, let me do that right now, because this is something that pertains to him as well. John, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
How are you?
I'm good, and yourself?
All right. I appreciate you being on the program. You might want to listen to this, because and it's something I Tom and I have had conversations this week, just as you and I have had conversations this week about this issue. And Tom mentioned that, usually the Bureau of Forestry comes in and limbs up trees so that the work can be done with a minimum of damage to the trees. And in our case, a couple of years ago, we had these trees limbed up already. We were dealing with gang issues on the street. The state representative, Luis Arroyo, got involved, and suddenly the city Department of Forestry was there, and they were limbing up the trees to get more light on the street so that it was easier to spot what's going on. So these trees were already limbed up a couple of years ago, and I know, because I'm a tree keeper. I am not an arborist, but I have this show, which I've done for 15 years, and it's talked a lot about trees and about other plants. And I saw the limbing up job was actually done very well, John. My kudos to the Bureau of Forestry, because they did a wonderful job. Mm-hmm. So my question is, and maybe I can, maybe we should start with Tom and then get to you, is, if they were already limbed up, would they have been limbed up even more as this work was going on? John, let's start with you.
Okay. Certainly, is the short answer. Normally, when our crews are going out and limbing up trees for improved street lighting, we do focus around the street lights themselves, but we do raise the trees to a point where it allows the light to penetrate. Excuse me. And improve visibility on the streets, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the trees would have the appropriate clearance for excavating equipment to come in and do work such as we're talking about here with sewer, water, or gas, things of that nature. So in order to get this heavy excavation equipment in, especially when it's working along a curbside, the trees would need to be further limbed up And again, we don't normally do this. It's really to facilitate the construction. Under ideal circumstances, we like to leave the trees, you know, as fully branched as possible. But you know, in this case, trimming is essential to protect the trees. And when we don't have the opportunity to get in there, we had the storm that prevented us getting in before the work was completed, then we still have the opportunity to come back after the fact and kind of clean up any branches that might have been injured. In fact, when we do this type of clearance for construction work, there are always some limbs that we try to, you know, they may be questionable. We try to leave them, see if the construction can get through, and if they can't, then we'll come back and clean them up. If they can stay, then good. You know, we're better off in the long run.
Tom, as you mentioned, you're trying to get a lot done here in a short time, and as you also mentioned, the infrastructure really, really needs the work. And you normally would have had the Bureau of Forestry come through and do this. But, okay, so say we do have this problem. And let's say somebody else on another street notices that there is some damage to trees. With me, I happen to know some people at the Bureau of Forestry, and through them I got your number. But what does the average person do if they spot something like this?
I would recommend that they call their alderman's office for a couple of reasons. One is they're likely to have that in mind and be able to reach out to the alderman's office. And the alderman's in a very good position to call us up, call something to our attention very promptly. And they can also call 311. I think they should do that too. But the alderman's office is there to promote neighborhood quality of life and to respond to situations that arise. And they're usually quite prompt and very assertive in getting our attention, and so calling the alderman's office is probably the best bet.
But what if they wanted to call the Department of Water Management? You would suggest not do that?
Oh, no, they're more than welcome to call the Department of Water Management, and I'll give you the commissioner's office number, because this is something we take very seriously, and if somebody thinks that trees are in danger or that somebody's being that careful enough, we want to hear about it very promptly. And so the commissioner's office number is 312-744-7001, and that will be answered. We don't want everybody calling up about miscellaneous matters, but if there's something that calls for immediate attention, then where trees or you know, the operation of a crew is involved, 312-744-7001 is the commissioner's office number.
And that is Thomas Powers, 312-744-7001. I have that number on my website, but obviously you can also call your alderman or 311. All right. This is not supposed to happen, as we know. And you wouldn't be on this show right now if it hadn't happened. My question is, how often do you see this? And what precautions do you take to make sure that this large equipment is not gouging trees? Tom, why don't we start with you?
Well, okay. The main thing that we do is we work closely with the Bureau of Forestry, Streets and Sanitation Department, to trim the trees in advance. I mean, in most cases, that's what happens. It was in this case, this was the unusual case, and something that could almost be called a perfect storm, where we were trying to keep to deadlines and that kind of thing. The Bureau of Forestry was unavailable because they were dealing with three emergencies around town. We went ahead and did our work, but at the expense of the trees, obviously. So that's the normal precaution. We also instruct our crews to be careful, to use care and diligence. We also are expecting them to be productive as they move down the street. So to the extent that there's a departure in those goals or a divergence in those goals, we need to make sure that they're completely aligned and that the respect for the trees and for the neighborhood around them prevails, and that we conduct ourselves as good neighbors. I mean, you would not go down to somebody's street as a visitor or as a guest and damage the trees deliberately. So we need to make sure that all of our crews are fully aware that they need to show diligence and care and caution when working around trees. But in most cases, this isn't going to happen because the Bureau of Forestry comes ahead of us.
And that's Tom LaPorte, Assistant Commissioner for the City of Chicago Department of Water Management. John Lowe is a senior city forester. And John, what is it you teach people with heavy equipment about trees?
Well, we do work with Greater Downtown Damage Prevention Council. As part of their training regimen, they talk about how to avoid different obstacles when digging below ground. But, of course, the trees, the damage that we're seeing, you're not seeing root damage, which there's no root damage typically. But the above ground is also equally important.
Let me stop you right there, because you bring up a really good point, John, which is typically the damage is root damage, isn't it? Isn't that the main damage you see from done to trees?
Certainly it can be. The Bureau of Forestry works through the Office of Underground Coordination, and we are notified of different projects that require excavation where there's any type of digging going on. And once we get the drawings for the different projects, we reach out to the project coordinators, the engineers, and sometimes we have to make some adjustments. You know, a fire hydrant gets moved one direction or another, you know, a few feet in order to preserve some existing roots. Same thing with gas. So in that sense, we do sort of a pre-construction review and try to resolve some of these issues even before the first digging begins. If, in fact, there are conflicts with trees which can't be, you know, corrected by some pre-construction review, then in some cases we might actually have to remove a tree. You know, trees, when first planted, look one way, you know, fairly small, compact. You put them in the ground, and, of course, in the city we have a very limited amount of space. But when you come back to that tree 40, 50 years later, you know, it's a whole another organism. I mean, it's a growing entity which has changed for those years, and you're going to have more overhanging limbs. You're going to have more root infrastructure. So at that point, we take a look and see what types of mitigation needs to occur. And again, the tree trimming is one of the foremost when you're digging with large excavating equipment. And then in some cases where you have trees growing right on the curb line, very, very difficult to work around. And sometimes they've outlived basically that space that they're in, and they need to be removed and replaced. Sometimes we're actually able to root prune these trees, dig around them. We can work with, for example, new sidewalks that are being installed. We can adjust the sidewalk alignment to go around the tree and give it space in order to preserve it. So it's kind of a balancing act, and really we try to preserve as many trees as possible, but in the same token, it's not always the case. You know, there are some instances where in order to complete construction work, the trees need to be removed and replaced.
Mm-hmm. And in this case, let's look at the case on my block, and it's not the roots that got damaged, it's the trunk of the trees and limbs, some of which were ripped off. What happens next? How are you going to evaluate the damage that's been done? Tom, let's start with you and then move on to John about what the forestry department will do.
Well, I'd like to defer to John, because I'm not the expert that he is in tree repair and in assessing the damage and that kind of thing. It's not my area of expertise. So our effort will be to call in the forestry and ask them to assist us.
Okay, well, I guess what I'll ask you then, Tom, is how soon do you think you can get forestry in there? Because I know as a tree keeper that you don't want to expose jagged limbs to the elements. Disease and insects can get in there and cause problems. How soon do you think we can see some remediation?
My understanding, and I haven't checked the schedules on this, but my understanding is that we're close to being complete for the job. As soon as it's practical, we're going to be asking the forestry to come in, and that, you know, that'll be a very immediate request.
Okay, and John Lowe from the Bureau of Forestry, you've seen the photos. How would you assess the damage to these trees, and what can you do at this point?
Well, I actually took a ride out there too, Mike, and you know, for the most part, the damage on the limbs seems like something that can either be trimmed to a you know, to back to a leader, where then the tree, you know, being a living entity and fortunately very resilient in most cases, they just start putting out new canopy, growing new branches, and in a few years you won't know the difference. One of the trees where there was a limb damaged, apparently it looks like it's growing over the curb, partially into the street, and what we'll have to do is evaluate, you know, the structure of that tree just in general to see, you know, independent of the construction, if it really should be where it's at. We'll also see if, in fact, it still seems to be pretty healthy and looks like it'll regrow new branches and such, that how we can best trim that and allow that to happen. There are also a number of bark scrapes, you know, not really too many. And quite frankly, in construction work, you do see some of this damage. You know, trees are a living entity, and as such, they generally evoke an emotional response from the residents because, you know, it's hard to see something alive and green get bumped or scraped. But at the same token, you know, in construction work, other aspects of the construction, you might have street lights, street poles, signs and things that also get bumped, and you don't get this response because, again, not a living entity. Obviously, if we can avoid injuring a tree, I mean, that is the ideal situation, and in most cases we're able to accomplish this. When you do have these types of scrapes and bumps, we try to clean them up as best we can. We'll trim off, again, the damaged limbs back to a sound leader, and really that the tree is able to compartmentalize, it's able to recover from that and start putting out new growth. So,
but John, what I will say is you say scrapes, and of course I would use the word gouge, but some of those scrapes are fairly significant on some of these trees. Now, I am assuming you're saying that the tree, as you say, the tree compartmentalizes, so it will find a way to heal over those scrapes. And the thing, though, is that trees, city trees are already under stress, and they don't need the added stress. But you're saying here you think that we're probably not in danger of losing any of these trees.
Again, we need to go out and do a detailed assessment, but I would say of all the trees I looked at just in the brief time I was out there, only one tree was questionable, and it wasn't, you know, the damage to the limb may have been avoidable when we looked at it pre-construction, or it may not have been. It may have been a candidate to get in there and remove that tree just because of the actual positioning of it on the parkway. Most of the scrapes and the gouges are up in limbs that should have been trimmed off, and those will be trimmed off, again, with a clean cut, which will promote the healing, the compartmentalizing, and the regrowth of that tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's also important to consider some of the things that residents can do if, you know, you want the trees to be healthy and vigorous. There's a number of practical steps. I don't know if you want me to get into those.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let Tom go, because there's a little bit more I want to talk to you about in terms of tree health and other things going on in the city of Chicago. So Tom LaPorte, Assistant Commissioner, City of Chicago Department of Water Management. Again, my thanks to you for stepping up and apologizing to the citizens on my block about the damage caused to the trees. And it sounds like John and his crew will get out there and do the best they can to clean it up. And my statement would be to folks listening to this, if you see it, don't remain silent. You know, this is the way that things get fixed, or the way that the work gets done better is if you become a voice for the trees, because the trees obviously can't speak for themselves. And what I was afraid of, Tom, is that there would be people unlike me who don't know anything about trees, and they would not know that perhaps they should be reporting something to their alderman and to 311 and to the Department of Water Management.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the opportunity to directly apologize to you and your neighbors, and also to more broadly spread the word that we need partnerships with the people in the neighborhoods as we do our work. So it's not necessarily restricted to trees. If there's things that we could be doing better, if there's questions that people have, we'd like them to give us a call and to be our partners in just making sure that we're being good neighbors and that we're working appropriately and we're not causing problems that we could avoid. It's seldom that we do, but the people being proactive in this and thinking that they have a voice and they have a means of reaching us is important. I gave my commissioner's number before, 312-744-7001. The only reason I'm not giving mine, which I'm happy to do, it's 312-742-1029, is that I'm leaving town on Tuesday for a couple of weeks, and I don't want anybody calling and leaving a voicemail and not getting a response. So call the alderman, call the commissioner, be our partners in this, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you, Mike.
Yeah, and as you said, there's a lot of work going on, so if you live in Chicago, chances are somebody's going to show up in your block, be putting in new water mains. And again, Tom LaPorte, thank you very much. You have a great vacation, and I'm sure we'll talk in the future.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And John Lowe is still with us. John, can you hang on for just a little bit?
Of course.
I want to talk a couple issues with you. Tree health, emerald ash borer in the city of Chicago is another issue. And, of course, if folks have any questions about tree care, 773-763-9278. And you can talk to City Forester right here on the Mike Novak Show. As you heard earlier in the program, D. Landreth Seed Company is once again offering their fabulous heirloom seeds and classic plants on the Mike Novak Show. Here's one you won't want to miss. We talked about it earlier, the wild saffron crocus bulb. Saffron is considered the most expensive spice on the planet, and I did not know that. The spice also has a very mild, pleasant flavor, but it is mostly coveted for its coloring ability. You're not going to get a lot of saffron from a package of bulbs. It takes 35,000 bulbs to produce a pound of saffron. It would take 1,100 bulbs to produce a half ounce of saffron, the amount one cook would probably use in a year if they cooked with saffron frequently. Make sure you get the wild saffron bulb, if you're in the Chicago area especially. This is the one that will grow in our Zone 5 gardens. It is the only saffron that will grow in the colder climates of the U.S., and it has a striking blue color. But you need to order soon. Landreth has a limited supply of these bulbs. Then you must plant them as soon as possible. You can even do it indoors. Set them out there. We were talking about the colchicums that you can do that with, and they all go boop. And that's another bulb that you might want to look at. Log on to LandrethSeeds.com, find them on Facebook, or call 800-654-2407. 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784, and tell them Mike sent you.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soil as it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's M-I-L-O-R-G-A-N-I-T-E.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
It was a beautiful day, sun beat down. I had the radio on, I was driving.
Wow, it sounds like today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Great segment earlier.
Thank you. Well, it's not done yet. We're still talking to John Lowe, who's a senior forester with the City of Chicago Bureau of Forestry. And you with me there, John?
I sure am.
Okay, I got a question coming in. So we'll do that, and then I will get back to you. Let's go to Dave, who's listening in San Francisco. Dave, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hey, greetings. You know, since the economy is so lousy all around, I'm just wondering if it would be legal for people to use their backyards as small nurseries for growing more trees. You know, if they did starter trees and then either sold them to the city or sold them to individuals, whether or not there'd be any problem with doing that.
You know, it doesn't sound like there'd be a problem. I don't think that cities are necessarily going to buy trees from individuals because you have contracts and you buy in bulk, right, John?
Yes. Typically, the trees we buy follow fairly fairly strict standards as far as form and size and health and condition. I think if a homeowner would like to grow some trees in the backyard for their own use, you know, that's certainly encouraged, or for their neighbors. As far as selling them, I'm not sure. I really can't address that as far as if there's any type of licensing required to do that.
Well, you know, it's like having children, I think. I don't think there's any license required, John. And Dave, here's what I would tell you. Being a fellow who's grown a number of trees in my own backyard, small trees, see, that I haven't grown anything that's going to get to 40 feet. All the trees I have are all what they call small trees, 25 feet or so. And yet still you have to pay attention to power lines. One of the things when people plant trees, they forget a couple of things. They forget how big the tree's going to get. And this is in terms of not only height, but width. John, you've seen this a lot, I'm sure, where the shrub blocks the door and you can't get in and it has to be removed. But when you're planting a tree, you need to look up. You got to look up and see where it's going to be as a mature tree. And Dave, I think that would be one of the drawbacks to putting a lot of large trees. The other drawback, I think, John, would be once they get large, how do you get them out of the ground? Because nurseries have equipment that can get the tree roots. And even then, a lot of the tree roots are damaged. Right, John?
That's very true. Very true. The nurseries actually have to do what they call root pruning while they're propagating the trees, and that way they build a compact root system that's more easily harvested when it comes time to dig up the tree and transplant it somewhere else. So if you have multiple trees growing in the same area, when you go to dig those trees, you're going to be severing a lot of roots and making those trees very difficult to transplant, or at least reduce their chances or survivability.
Yeah, so, good point, yeah.
So those are the drawbacks. I mean, I always encourage people to plant trees, Dave, but be careful about how many you plant and how big they're going to get, and that would be my advice to you.
Hey, well, probably along the same lines, there are a lot of different herbs and you know, smaller plants that people could do, you know, help sort of like a small garden patch, but different. Maybe they could even do them for seed sales or something like that. With the drought, you know, obviously people are going to have trouble putting together, what do they call them, the heritage seeds, the you know, the established kind of seeds, since the GMO is conquering everything, if people were able to use some of those original heritage seeds, they'd be able to do seed production in small parcels like apartments. Yeah.
Yeah, but David, that's a conversation for another day. I'm going to get back to the tree. All right, thanks for calling, buddy. Bye-bye. 773-763-9278, John Lowe, City of Chicago Forester. Where were we? I wanted to talk a little bit about emerald ash borer and tree health in general. We were kind of in the direction of tree health in general. Let's start with that, because I'll tell you why. You mentioned how trees grow, and it starts off as one kind of entity and then becomes a completely different one in a matter of years, mainly because the root ball expands, the branches grow, and something you started with does change. I saw you guys are backed up right now because of storms we had in the area. I saw a video on television about a couple of weeks ago, and it showed a tree that had been a parkway tree uprooted. And the area that butted against the curb was as smooth as a yardstick. I mean, that whole line of roots got to the curb and went boink and stopped. It was pretty interesting. Huh? But then you could see that along the parkway, the roots had gone out. What's some advice you can give to people to keep the trees on their parkway healthy, even though obviously that's city property and they're city trees? But what can they do to maintain those trees?
That's a very good question. Really, the best thing you can do for a tree, the most basic thing would be to get out and mulch it. You know, if you're not completely married to having a lawn underneath a tree, or even if you are, you can put a limited amount of mulch. And mulch has just so many benefits as far as conserving moisture and protecting that root zone, that you're going to have a really happy, happy root zone that's thriving and building a really good support system.
And I would argue that you probably don't want to grow your lawn up to the tree. It causes so many problems. For one thing, the tree roots are in competition with the lawn roots, the turf roots. You're likely to get what we call lawnmower blight, which is when you bump your lawnmower up against the tree, and that's going to cause damage to the tree. Same thing with a weed whacker, because, you know, you want to grow that lawn right up there and make it look good. And people always say, oh, don't worry, I'm really good with a weed whacker. Yeah, and then they whack the tree. So put the mulch ring as far out as you possibly feel comfortable, right?
Certainly. You know, if you can mulch essentially the same distance as you have the crown of the tree, as far as the branches extend, that would be ideal. Not always practical in depending upon the conditions. Sometimes you're limited to doing a circle maybe 6 or 8 feet out from the tree. And you also want to remember no more than 3 inches, maybe 4 inches to start, and it'll settle down. Also, don't put the mulch directly against the base of the tree. Leave a little bit of a buffer, and that way you're not going to have different insects or moisture problems against the base of the tree, which could cause problems as well.
Yeah, no volcano mulch. That's one of our our big rules here on the Mike Novak Show. No volcano mulch. And you make a really good point. Not too deep. You know, usually somewhere between 2 and 4 inches is going to do the job, right?
Correct. Yes.
All right. Quickly, emerald ash borer. We know that it's in Illinois. It's going to kill a lot of ash trees. There are hot spots all over the place. What about the city of Chicago? What are you seeing in the city of Chicago?
The city is no different than anywhere else. Emerald ash borer was first detected in Illinois back in 2006. In Chicago, we first found it in 2008, and we're already 4 years after that time where we're finding emerald ash borer scattered throughout the city.
Are you seeing any particular hot spots in the city?
I would say the earlier infestations obviously develop a little bit more. Generally, along sort of the entry points of the city, along expressways, along the Des Plaines River. So we'll see it on the north side, along the west side, and down around the south side, all of which are transportation corridors. But really, the nature of the insect is that by the time you can see visible symptoms in the tree, visible damage, then the insect's at least a mile beyond that point. And typically, you won't see damage for 2 or 3 years. So you can imagine the insects are going to be 2 or 3 miles away from that point. So at this time, it's scattered, you know, in pockets throughout.
Given that the trees are already stressed in an urban environment, and couple that with the fact that once you see tree damage, as you said, the emerald ash borer has moved on a mile, but that tree that you're seeing the damage has already sustained quite a bit of damage. What are you prescribing for people who see damage? Is it immediate removal of the tree? Are you treating trees? What are you guys doing?
Well, the city is taking sort of a combined approach. We are removing trees that are in poor condition, but we're also trying to do some type of insecticide injections on trees in sort of the hot spots, or at least in some of the areas where we initially found emerald ash borer, in order to suppress it, and that way we can sustain the urban canopy for a little bit longer, give us some time to do some replacement trees, and give them a chance to become established before the ash have to come down. I mean, it's important to remember that even with injections, tree injections, we're not looking to save these trees indefinitely. We're really looking to suppress the borer and buy us time to safely remove the declining trees as well as get new trees established. And homeowners facing the same type of situation need to really make some hard decisions. If they're interested in saving the tree, or even if they think the tree's got to come out, really the best bet is to call an arborist up and have them come out and give them an evaluation of their tree and see if, in fact, it's at a point where it can be saved, or if due to the condition of the tree, you know, not only from emerald ash borer, but maybe the age, where it's located, kind of what it looks like at this time, they may want to go ahead and remove that tree and then get a new tree established and start growing a new tree.
Well, and the point is, if you don't continue to treat a tree, if you've got an ash tree, and some ash trees are beautiful, and somebody might want to hold on to it, but that's going to be care for a long time because the pressure is going to be on for a long time, isn't it?
That's correct. And it's not to say there are certainly ash trees out there that are worth preserving. If you have a tree in your yard that is providing lots of shade, it's in good condition, you can actually preventively treat that tree and protect it from emerald ash borer for quite a long time. So again, it's sort of the homeowner's decision. The option is there. The only caution I have is that once you start seeing more advanced damage in the tree, then the vascular system, the actual sap movement capacity of that tree has been reduced, and the treatments will no longer work.
Yeah, and that's part of the deal here is that unfortunately for ash trees, it has to be preemptive, doesn't it, to a large degree?
Typically, it should be preemptive, right?
Yeah.
Once you're seeing the effects, then you know, it's not as easy to save that tree.
All right. Before I let you go, we got a question coming in. Carl in Rockford, you're on the Mike Novak Show, Carl.
Good morning. I got a question. I planted some new Colorado spruce, I believe they are. They're about a 3-foot-tall tree. And I've got one of them that the top third is turning brown, but the bottom's still nice and green. Is there anything I can do to help survive, and at what point do we call it quits and say the tree will not make it?
How tall was that tree?
It's about 3 foot tall.
3 foot tall, okay. It sounds like it might be like a spruce budworm, in which case the tree needs to be sprayed, and you could potentially go and get spray at you know, your local garden center. Let them know that that's what you have, and you know, you can try to tackle it that way. Usually, when you have a tree that small, though, and if it has that type of damage already beginning, it's kind of hard to treat it. It's really a better option if you're looking at a larger tree, which has already got more or less an established root system that helps it recover. Again, if you are really looking to preserve this tree, then you might want to contact a local arborist just to come and have a look at it. It's really hard to diagnose sight unseen, but they can give you some sound advice. And, you know, there's a really good network where you can find arborists, the Illinois Arborist Association, and they have a website where you can find certified arborists who I'm sure would be more than happy to come out and give you some firsthand advice.
So there you go. Go ahead. What was that, Carl?
These are new trees. I just planted them about 8 weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, that new. Okay. Well, and in which case, you might actually want to contact your source where you purchase the trees and find out exactly what type of warranty or replacement program they have, because generally when the evergreens, the coniferous trees, start to brown out, it's not really a good sign. It means that there's something inherently wrong, and when it's coming from the top down, it sounds like, you know, something either came with it when you bought it, or you know, the tree was just under a great deal of stress being transplanted, and chances are, you know, it's not going to make it.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with John here, Carl. Finding out that you just got them, this is the time to show the folks who sold them to you what's going on and say, hey, we may need to replace these. I appreciate your phone call, Carl. Have a good Sunday. And John, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be talking again in the future.
Sounds good, Mike. One last thing I just wanted to mention is if homeowners are seeing branches that are broken or damaged in any time, you know, be sure to call 311 and the city will come out and take care of it. We don't want anyone getting up and doing any type of trimming themselves. Not only is it sort of against city policy, but it's also not safe. So just remember.
Oh, come on, John. People love to get on a ladder and balance on one foot while they got a chainsaw going. That's fun. I know, it's crazy, and I think that's a really good point. Don't do any serious pruning yourself. Leave it up to the professionals. And like you said, you're the people who handle it on the parkway, so you're better off calling 311. All right, John, have a great Sunday, and thanks for being on the show.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the first annual veggie fair at Knuper's.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine.
feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Ha ha. Here's a tip from the care of trees. Speaking of trees, have you ever wondered what your trees are actually worth? Trees help us in many ways. They help control stormwater runoff, save our home's energy usage, increase our home's property value, improve air quality, and reduce carbon in the atmosphere. Your trees are worth more than you may realize. So how do you find out the benefits your particular tree provides? The National Tree Benefit Calculator is a website that allows anyone to get a better understanding of the approximate value of their trees. It is very simple to use. All you need to know is the type of tree and the diameter of the trunk. After selecting your climate zone by entering your zip code or choosing from the map, you enter the tree's species and diameter. Once calculated, you can see detailed benefit information on your tree. Go to treebenefits.com to calculate the value of your trees. That's treebenefits.com. Then invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com. Or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Hey! And, of course, she is Lori Gravagna, who is on the line with us. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Lori, now, I for years, there's been this debate on how you pronounce the name of your garden center. And how do you pronounce it?
It's Canupers.
Canupers.
Yes.
All right. Wait. There we go. The official pronunciation of the Mike Novak Show, Canupers.
Right.
In Palatine. And, you know, you've got a hard enough name to pronounce yourself. Did I get that right?
You got it right.
Lori Gravagna.
Very good.
Gravagna. And
yeah.
Like lasagna. But with
exactly.
Right, exactly. And I'll bet you've never had any jokes made in your behalf about Gravagna lasagna.
No, not at all.
Never. Never in high school, never anything like that.
Right, right.
The big veggie fair is next Saturday, the 25th of August. I'm going to be there speaking at 1 o'clock. But it sounds like it's going to be really fun. It starts at around 10 a.m. and goes to like 4, and including a veggie contest judging, most uncommon vegetable, heaviest tomato, ugliest. I like the ugliest tomato competition.
Right, that should be a fun one.
I think so. Heaviest zucchini. And I've seen them the size of tractors, zucchinis. Sometimes,
wow.
Yeah, they get pretty big.
Yeah.
Prettiest multicolored pepper. And mm-hmm. What's the potato pageant?
Oh, the potato pageant is fun. You take a store-bought potato. You can dress it up any way you want. I actually did a sample one of Elvis.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So it should be a lot of fun. It's just something for kids or adults.
Wait. I have to ask you. Old Elvis or young Elvis? It's important.
Kind of a middle-aged Elvis, I would say.
Well, considering he only got to be 42.
Right. I have a big potato for him, so I would say
Whoa, the big potato.
Middle-aged. Yeah,
and he's got the paunch and the belt around the paunch,
exactly.
Right? And the white
exactly.
Jumpsuit, right?
That's right. Yep.
That's the old Elvis. The young Elvis is the swivel hips. Then you'd have
right.
You need a skinny potato.
That's right. So mine is kind of a large potato.
Yeah.
But that should be a fun event. So we're going to display everyone's characters or animals. And actually, Alaska State Fair does something similar. So we thought that was kind of a fun event.
So basically, you're just stealing stuff from other other fairs, right?
Right. Theirs is Potato Parade. Theirs is a little different.
Oh, wow. Maybe uh-huh. Maybe next year you have the potato parade. The other
right.
thing you've got, and this is the first annual veggie fair, Canupers is located where?
It's 1801 North Palatine Road, so right past Dundee.
Mm-hmm. and yeah. one of the great garden centers in the area. You've got a water bath canning demonstration, decorating gourds, seasonal cooking demo, pie eating contest. That's old school.
Yes, and we would love to have people sign up. So they can call. It's 847-359-1080 if they're interested in participating. So that should be another fun thing we're doing.
So you need for the pie eating, you need to get on board and call in. Give me that number again.
847-359-1080.
Okay, and that's...
Yep, they can register for pie eating, and it's ages 15 and up.
Good. I'm glad. Don't put kids in there. That's just too dangerous.
Yeah.
No jumping into pies. All right.
Right.
Well, I'm looking forward to it being there next Saturday at 1 p.m. Of course, I'm going to be talking about my community garden and people stealing pumpkins and things like that. And and Denny, you had something before we wrap up here. Laurie, I'm going to let you go, and I will see you next week.
Okay, great. Hope everyone comes out. It should be a fun time.
And, of course, all the information is on my website. And and go there and you can find it. And I'll see you then. Take care.
Okay, great. Thanks
Bye.
So much.
You've got like 10 seconds. What was it? What
no,
was your
I didn't
idea?
Want anything to mention. I was just wanting to check up with you and see how that was a thing, right?
Well, they kind of, it's slowing down. Let me put it that way.
No.
We still got one really big pumpkin, and I probably cursed myself, and it might not be there when I get home.
All right. We'll find out.
Go green or go home.